Jets Nation, get ready, because it's time for some Drake Mayhem with Fitzy and Chime on WEEI.
And a very pleasant good evening to one and all within the sound of our voices. Remember when there was Drake Mayhem? Remember when there was Drake Mania? Yeah, I do too. I liked it better when we were excited about Drake May and the Patriots and not always fighting with each other about everything collapsing around us, Chris Scheim. Hi, it's the Fitzy and Scheim evening program here on Boston Sports Original 93.7 FM, WEEI and WEEI.com, and of course heard on your favorite app, the Odyssey app, where you can catch all of your favorite WEEI shows, the Six Rings and Football Things podcast, and so much more. You want to holler at us? You want to get angry at the Patriots? You want to offer your solutions to the mess with Gerard Mayo, Alex Van Pelt, the yappiest wide receiver room in the history of time, Bill Belichick clapping back at the Patriots, and so much more? We're here for you. 617-779-7937. And, of course, the text line, as monitored by producer extraordinaire Zach Coe, wouldn't you know, that's 37937. Scheim, I'm exhausted. I'm just flat out. It's seven games into a football season that I was looking forward to as much as you, or at least nearly as much, probably for a number of different reasons. It's a new regime. There were new players, new defensive coordinator, although he was a familiar face, new offensive play caller, although he was a league-wide familiar face, rookie quarterback, new personnel guy, everything new. And yet, for some reason, it feels like a lot of the worst of the old magnified and multiplied.
Yeah, it's not great here, Fitzy. You know, we're kind of in a mess. It's kind of just a disaster. I am still happy that Drake May is my quarterback. I'm going to keep rooting for him every single week. He continues to try and rise above the fray a little bit here. When you hear him in his press conferences yesterday and talking to the afternoon program here on WEEI, and that's the kid I want to support. I want to lift him up. I want him to continue to be good. I want him to show the world that regardless of how much of a dysfunctional the maelstrom he has been tossed into, he is able to rise above it and continue to get better and continue to be a rising quarterback in this league.
Yes, he is a bright, young, shining star. We have a bright spot. We have but a North Star, sir. We have something to look toward.
And it's better than nothing.
It still is better than nothing. As the great Principal Ed Rooney said in Ferris Bueller's Day Off by the now-canceled actor Jeffrey Jones, between grief and nothing, I'll take grief. That said, I'd rather one something to be positive about than absolutely nothing.
Sure.
And I'm very, very, very happy that Drake May is coming along as well as he possibly can. As a matter of fact, that's one of the reasons why I say if you were to power rank or put together a firing line of people that you would be mad at or frustrated by, whoever you wanted to cut the largest slice of blame pie for, or if the blame pie was a pizza pie, and normally you only want everyone to take us. I'm always hungry for pizza. Listen,
always.
I mean, if I'm awake, I want a beer or a pizza or a hug.
Oh,
so whatever order, feel free to power rank those on your own at home, everybody. 37937 on the text line. But you know what? I would almost even say, to Alex Van Pelt, like, you know what? You don't need to go grab a second piece of pie. You're having trouble with the play calling. That's enough right now. There's plenty of other people that deserve a second slice before you at this point. So let me ask you this. As we sort and sift through all the mess, all this garbage, who right now is the person, I won't say that draws the most ire from you, Scheim, but who would you say right now is the one person who should pull an I am Spartacus? No, I am Spartacus should step to the fore and just lead the charge to clean up the mess, accept responsibility, and try to salvage. I'm not saying, make a playoff push or, turn this whole ship around, Captain. No, I just mean, like, make something positive of this season, because even if Drake May is developing nicely, eventually, even he might just be like, "Yo, I'll see y'all next year because I'm contractually obligated." But maybe Mac was right. This place sucks.
Yeah, I think in my mind, I want it to be Gerard Mayo, but I guess I'm with each passing day, losing more and more faith that he would be able to do that. And maybe he is just a first-year head coach that's figuring things out and kind of working through a lot of the kinks, and maybe he's saying too much and walking stuff back and saying more and walking that back and really kind of trying to find his way as a guy who's literally never been the head coach of a football team at any level of the sport. And so I want it to be him, but with each passing day, I'm realizing more and more that, shockingly enough, I think it's the offense. I think, led by Drake May, the only way to kind of right the ship is that these guys just start playing great. And it's, you have to, as much blame as we put on Elliott Wolf entering this season for the and into the first few weeks for the lack of talent, especially in the offensive line, I think it's imperative of him to send a message for the organization by cutting bait with and or trading a couple of these guys who seem to be talking too much. And then it's imperative that a guy like Drake May just continues to progress and get better and hopefully becomes that beacon of light that guides you out of the darkness a little bit. And people start rallying to him in that he can win you football games, right? Like, that's the thing that I go back to, is I look at that Jaguars game and you were down two possessions on your own 5-yard line, and Drake May drives you down the field and scores a touchdown, no problem, in minutes. Like, he had three or four possessions in the second half, all of which were 3.5 minutes or less. And in one of those possessions, drove you down the field 95 yards to put you within a score. Your head coach decided to go for two in that situation when he didn't need to, but that's a whole different conversation. Regardless, your young quarterback in a two-possession game, when you needed him to, went down the field and got you a score. That you can build on. That you can look at and be like, wow, this is a guy who can win us football games. It's not garbage time. That stuff matters. And to me, I think that's right now the only way you're going to find yourself out of this mess. Otherwise, it is going to continue to be a nightmare.
Yeah, it's like I'm supposed to, I think you are too, and I think tens of thousands of hundreds of thousands of up to millions of people are supposed to be looking forward to Sunday's game. It's an AFC East showdown. It's Pats Jets. It's the second clash. It's their chance to get revenge for that Thursday night football trash fire from a few weeks back. One of only two wins on the season for the Jetropolitans. They a special kind of mess themselves, but since things are so messy in our house, people who live in glass houses that are currently under fire and being attacked by lions and bears probably shouldn't throw stones. So we'll try to take care of everything at House Craft and House Mayo right now. But the idea that we were so excited for this game, or at least would have been a few weeks ago, and now you're talking about, like, wow, Jets at Patriots, the loser of this game may have the fast track to the number one draft pick, and it's a battle to stay out of the AFC East cellar where they may reside the rest of the season. I don't even know, I can't point to, on a calendar or schedule, the winnable game the rest of the way. I mean, if I were half in the bag right now, that won't take place for a couple hours, at least until halftime of Thursday Night Football, I would say to you, you know what, Shime, all I got to do is just cut it out. Just go, you know, full air raid with Drake May, and they could win tonight, Sunday, whatever, and then they could beat the Titans, and then they could win, you know, against the Bears and the Rams. No. This team right now does not have, this is what's so, why it's so important to try to start cleaning up this mess and tell everyone, especially the wide receivers, to shut the blank up. There is no winning DNA. There is no leadership. None. Now, there isn't. This is why winning last Sunday, you and I were both big time aboard the victory ship. We were all aboard the winning express last Sunday because we thought this would teach these guys how to win. And look what happened in a game where they had an early lead. They found a way. They not only got beat by, you know, 11,000 straight Tank Bigsby runs and the Jags just basically ripping the Patriots lunch out of their hands and eating it in front of them and their girlfriend. They also got beat, but they found a way to lose as well. Mental mistakes, more penalties, the damn punt return, which, by the way, not for nothing, I haven't spoken to you since last weekend. The fact that Mayo kind of threw that at the feet of Bryce Baringer, let's knock that crap
stupid.
Off.
That guy's like the best player on your team outside of your quarterback.
Yeah. How about you tell your special teams unit to somebody throw a body, you know, get a pad or a hat on that guy as well.
Yeah, what about Brandon Schooler, that guy you just paid an extension to? Why didn't he make a tackle?
Fair question.
It's like, that's the thing. Like, stop throwing. That's the other thing. Like, you're the head coach. Stop throwing blame, especially at one of your best players. And far be it for me to say that at any point in time should a punter be one of your best players, but it's the case here. It just is what it is. And so don't be throwing the blame at the feet of one of your best players just because the rest of the unit screwed up. Like that should just never happen, a punt return touchdown. You got to cover it better. Like, and maybe put it on yourself and the special teams coordinator. How about that? Like, instead of throwing it at the feet of Bryce Berringer for hitting an absolute missile to the opposite end of the field, where a guy then takes it 97 yards to the house.
Mm-hmm. 97. Like, he was trying. And most of it was straight up the gut, by the way, Shime.
Yeah, like, I would generally agree. Don't kick a ball right up the middle. Unless you're pitting them inside the 5-yard line, which is exactly what Berringer was trying to do. He hit it to the 3-yard line. If they call a fair catch and don't catch it and try to let it bounce into the end zone, you might get that on the 1-yard line and Berringer's a hero. Instead, the rest of the unit doesn't properly cover the punt and they go 97 yards to the house. So maybe, just maybe, we don't throw this on the punter for trying to do his job.
Yeah, the guy literally is one of the only, here's the sad part. Ready? If the Patriots right now, I've seen people do this. Our old pal Mike Kadlec did something similar to this as well. If you were to do an expansion draft in the NFL and the Patriots got to protect 5 players, you're telling me Bryce Berringer wouldn't be on your protection list? And what does that say about the current state of your team?
He might be, right? Because it's like, Drake May, definitely. I guess I might keep Pop Douglas. I'd keep Christian Gonzalez. I guess I can be swayed on Keon. I'd keep Christian Barmore. Hopefully,
yep. You start with Barmore. You start with Barmore, May, and Gonzo, and then it's a pick
it's
two
a free
rodeo.
For all for the final 2 spots.
Yeah, I mean, it might be Joey Sly and Berringer. How sad is that?
How embarrassing is that?
How sad is that?
Oh, no, you know, I keep,
up to a month ago, Jabril Peppers may have been one of them. I guess, you know,
I'd keep Marcus Jones, great returner. Dynamic player. It's more than I can say about 95% of the roster.
Yeah, you wouldn't keep anyone on the offensive line. You wouldn't keep any linebackers.
Fitzy,
all the wide receivers can just kiss off. Just goodbye.
They signed 2 offensive linemen in the offseason that are no longer on the team. Why would I want anybody from this offensive line ever?
My God. They're going to set the NFL record for the most offensive linemen ever
by,
used in a
by
season.
Week 10.
Yeah, but before they're bye. See, look, at least we're having fun with it now. Like,
it's so depressing, you have to laugh.
That's all you can do.
It really is.
No, honestly, Zach, how old are you again? 18?
25.
25. You look 18. Take the baby face compliment and run with it when you get a chance. I will. It from old bones Uncle Fitzy over here. Take the compliment. Anyway, so you have only known. So you are basically, you're a Y2K baby. So you have basically only known success, joy, duck boats, dominance, and dynamic sports in Boston, correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so you haven't lived through any previous rebuilds, dysfunction, turmoil, Rod Ross, Dick McPherson, Celtics in transition. Like, you don't know that.
No, like, Red Sox a little bit, but even then, like, the World Series make up for all that tenfold.
Oh, I mean, yeah. I mean, what were you still, like, you know, crapping in a diaper and playing with a rattle when Joe Kerrigan was the manager? I mean, my God. There have been down years where it's like, we're finished in first. We made the playoffs. Then we finished in last place. That's the Alex Cora coaster, if you will. But yeah.
I'm only 7 years older than him, and I barely know any of the horror stories of Boston sports.
But Zach is like Zach Coe, our producer, he is the face of that, you know, he is exactly who I would look to see in the crowd at a duck boat parade.
Yep.
You know, crushing a slim can of some sort of hard seltzer or light beer and holding up a sign in the other one that says, like, I'm this many years old and all I've known is win. You know, or like, you know, 18 years old, 13th parade, suck it, America. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
So, Zach, this must be like the worst you can remember any of the 4 teams.
Yeah, easily.
That's unbelievable.
My dad keeps talking about Steve Grogan and how bad they were back in the day.
Scott Sekules, Tommy Hodson, Hugh Millen. Oh, my God. This is making me feel so old. I'm going to need to get my bones carbon dated later. And B, oh, it was awful. Oh, Zach. Oh, dude, it was Zach. It was terrible. But the crazy thing is, this is why it sort of makes all these discussions Well, with someone like yourself, who's technically older than Belichick's girlfriend, that was unnecessary, but I apologize for nothing.
That's an unnecessary shot across the bow, but I love it.
Ah, he was criticizing my team all week.
Damn, leave us alone, Fitzy.
Come on, Bill, leave us alone. But the thing is that makes it so jarring, Zach, is that we were there, and then we were so far ahead of everyone else for so long, and the rising tide of Kraft and Belichick and Brady raised the seas of Boston so much that it seemed impossible for any team, let alone the Patriots, to sink back down to a level of when people used to walk into the stadium and say, yeah, I had 4 tickets on the way in. I put them on a windshield. When I came out, there were 14 more. Like, that's the way it used to be around here, Zach. And we're on our way back there again, and it's unbelievable.
It's so hard, too, Fitzy, like, when you think about it, because I feel like people like yourself and Zach's dad and even, like, my dad and Greg and people who have lived through all that crap beforehand were saying at the time, occasionally, like, that foreboding character in any movie that's like, oh, watch out for what's to come, and, like, beyond the horizon.
Who are you, creepy exposition character?
yeah, just some old dude in a cloak that's telling you to be careful of what's to come around a fire. And you're like, all right, thanks, bud. And then little do you know, beyond the horizon of all that dominance and all those championships was the departure of Tom Brady, an absolute turmoil for your franchise that you never would have expected.
You know, Hart always has a point, and I'm not sure how much he's taken this.
You've been working with him too much.
Yeah, I know. I've heard a lot over the last couple of years. Interesting comment made by his old pal, Paul Perillo, today at Patriots Football Weekly on the Patriots Unfiltered show. May have been an ad hominem attack on Hart. We'll see. I'll get to that audio later. But he always sort of said it was an interesting point because he was around the Patriots and Belichick so much. And we'll catch a break in a second. But he said, you know, the funny thing is Belichick's genius and his laser-like focus on certain details leaves a blind spot in him in that sometimes he forgets to put together succession plans because it seems like he thinks things are just going to work out because things are so good at that particular moment, and he's so focused on the next game plan, the next opponent, etc. Can you name a position? I can only name one. I really can only name one, and that would be the slot receiver when they lucked into Edelman coming out of Welker.
Yeah.
Where there was a proper succession plan.
Yeah, there never was. You're absolutely right. And I think that's what made the Bill Belichick Tom Brady combination so lethal, is that Belichick was afforded the luxury of never having to worry about that because Tom Brady masked all the deficiencies that would arise if those succession plans like just didn't happen. Like if he couldn't find guys off the scrap heap to fill in those holes, Tom Brady covered them, and you roll out of bed and you win 12 games and then you're in the playoffs, and then it's anybody's game once you're there. And it's more so about game planning and the play of your quarterback than anything else. And I think that's what made that relationship so perfect, is that Tom Brady covered those. And once Tom Brady was gone and Bill Belichick was like, oh crap, I should start finding like the plans for all of these positions, he found himself in over his head and things just went awry.
617-779-7937 is your gateway to a conversation about the New England Patriots. Who's bothering you the most? How we're going to get out of this? And have you even taken a minute to think about this weekend's football game, or are we so caught up in the grand scheme and big picture that we've forgotten to think about exactly how Drake May is going to do in his first start against the Jets, who are also mired in their own dysfunction and turmoil?
Fitzy, I would like to tease real quick. Have
a co-host tease is like my favorite thing in the world.
Well, I have for you the best, most positive take on the Patriots this weekend that you'll find anywhere around.
You do?
Yep.
Oh, okay. That is indeed a tease, and we will pay that off in just moments. But first, let us regale you with all the latest trending sports news delivered by the one and only Zach Coe.
The exclusive home for Patriots Monday and Friday.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending now brought to you by Jackson Lumber and Millwork. The Celtics are down in the nation's capital for a matchup with the Wizards. Only new injury for the Celtics is Sam Hauser, who was ruled out with lower back pain. Tip-off from Capital One Arena set for 7 p.m. Bruins return home from a 1-1-1 three-game road trip to take on the Dallas Stars at the Garden. Couple lineup changes for the Bees. Parker Wotherspoon will slot in for Mason Lauri, and Cole Koepke will be moving up in the lineup after a positive start to the season. Jeremy Swayman will once again be in net. Puck drop from the Garden set for 7 p.m. Another day, another wide receiver controversy for the Patriots. Today it was Kayshon Booty who was vocal about wanting to get the ball more. Also in Patriots world, an updated injury report dropped today ahead of Sunday's matchup with the Jets. Running back Ramondre Stevenson returned to practice after missing yesterday's due to personal reasons slash his nagging foot injury, while wide receiver Jalen Polk remains in concussion protocol and missed practice, and guard Layden Robinson was also absent, nursing an ankle injury. Pats will welcome the Jets to Gillette Stadium on Sunday afternoon, kickoff set for 1 p.m. Contractors, builders, and homeowners, visit Jackson Lumber and Millwork for all your residential remodeling or commercial building materials and supplies. Jackson Lumber and Millwork, providing solutions and delivering results since 1946. My name is Zach Coe, and that's what's trending on WEEI and WEEI.com.
Prepare yourself, Pats fans. Drake Mayhem returns with Fitzy and Scheim on WEEI.
Growing dissatisfaction with the receivers yesterday. KJ Osborne sort of alluded to that he wouldn't mind being traded. Kayshon Booty said something along the lines that he didn't feel like he had to keep asking to get him the ball on the sidelines. Is this a situation where maybe you or the staff has to meet with this group and sort of have this like kumbaya moment or just sort of talk to them?
Yeah, I think we all understand we're frustrated. You know, nobody's going to be happy at 1-6. That's just the reality of it. But I think that room in particular needs to keep the focus inward. You know, we have a big game this week. All of our focus should be on how we can, you know, get a W on Sunday. It's a very good opponent coming in. I understand the frustrations. That's part of losing football. Best way to take care of that is to get a win. But I think our focus right now needs to be solely on the Jets because it's a challenge.
Patriots offensive coordinator and Jedi master to quarterback Drake May, Alex Van Pelt, earlier today, thanks to our pal Tommy Freeze Pops for bringing that audio to us from Gillette Stadium. This is the Fitzy and Scheim show. Fitzy and Scheim, I apologize. I'm mildly dehydrated. My alliteration has gone the way of the dodo and the Patriots season as well. Holler at us, 617-779-7937. Boy, am I really glad to hear that. And Scheim, you know what I kind of wish? I kind of wish, talk about the perfect time for a beer summit where you sit down with Van Pelt and you say, like, look, this isn't about us talking about your schemes and your play design and whatever else because, well, I don't love the run pass or like, hey, the passing is working. Let's switch to the run as much. I would love to hear him just like go off about these. Like, I would love to hear an unfiltered take from somebody that has not been around the organization prior to this year.
Yeah.
And hear them just be like, you've got to be kidding me. Who the hell does KJ Osborne and or Kayshon Booty and or Pop Douglas and or any of these Jags think they are?
I would be really curious to hear his thoughts, right? Like, give him the truth serum, see what he says. Like, I'm curious what a lot of guys think because I feel like this is not how locker rooms should act ever. Like, even when you're bad, it shouldn't be this bad.
Not even close. Not even close to this bad. And where do people get off on the notion of, you know, say, calling for the ball? We'll get into that a little bit more, but like, each and every somebody in that receiver room has groused. Now, listen, I understand that earlier in the year, because of the Jacoby Brissett factor, whatever you want to call it, like there was a certain point where nobody was getting the ball. As a matter of fact, the Patriots were on target. Patriots are on track for less than 1,000 yards receiving overall from all the wide receivers. After a couple weeks with Jacoby Brissett, it was that bad.
Yeah.
It was bad. It was awful. Real bad. Now, it's improved drastically because Drake May's in over 500 yards the first 2 weeks. You've probably heard the stat in the comp to Dan Marino. Only two quarterbacks ever over their first two games.
Pretty good TDs company.
It is pretty damn good company, except, of course, check the Patriots Instagram and Twitter where they published that little graphic today. And all it is like, hashtag fire Mayo. Tell Kraft to sell the team. I hate my life and my team so much. Like, it's just so negative now. God, do we need a flush? Do we need to detoxify? We need a cleanse. Who can come and save us? Let's see if we can...
Maybe even an enema, to be honest.
All right. Well, what movie was that in? Oh, when Jack Nicholson played the Joker. This town needs an enema. Well, this franchise needs an enema.
It does. It needs to drink that chalky, milky substance and just clear yourself out completely.
You know what? Considering that I'm a month and a half out from my first colonoscopy.
Tough. Wiggy encourages that, though. Wiggy is the number one spokesman for getting colonoscopies and men's health in that regard. So good job by you.
Absolutely. Get the boys checked. I had a mole removed on my backer last week. Got the biopsy back today. Found out it's all good. Like, these are the, don't worry about, like, just, I'd rather have fewer things to worry about. Like, I don't want to worry about, you guys are of the age, and I'm sure Zach is like, holy smokes, when did this turn into the AARP radio hour? But, like, you know, when you're young enough, you can drive through the check engine light, or you can look at that little sticker on the windshield and be like, ah, you know what? It says I should have changed my oil 7,000 miles ago, but I'll get around to it eventually. I mean, the engine doesn't stink that bad. You get to a point where you need to take care of those things. You know where the Patriots are right now? In the stinking engine, need a hose in the rear, take care of themselves portion of their existence right now.
Well, actually, I think the engine just caught on fire and they're pulled over on the side of the road.
Oh, God. Even the AAA truck is going to drive by like, we'll get to that one later.
Yeah, I don't think we need to get to that one right now.
All right, Sean, before we get to your super positive Patriots take, let's go to the phones and check in with our Pats people. Line one, we got Dan and Cranston here first up tonight on the Fitzy and Shime Show. How are you, Danny?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Excellent. What's up, man?
Hey, Nick. I'm not going to be long-winded on this. I'll make it quick as possible. But to understand where you are, where we are today, you got to see where we've been. What I mean with that is I'm basically just going to expose Kraft and partly Belichick as quickly as possible. James Blitzer-Ortwein has his Patriots in the same spot. Ortwein hires Parcells. Kraft buys a team. Parcells builds a team up. 95 draft. We all know how it went. He got two Hall of Famers and Teddy Johnson. The next year, what did he have? Lawyer Malloy, Terry Glennon, Teddy Bruschi, okay? Mm-hmm. What happens at the end? They go to the Super Bowl. Kraft somehow runs the guy out of town. He already has a job with the Jets, and he doesn't fly home with the team. This is a guy, think about that. Think about that. The next year, show these guys, see if you can Google a picture of Kraft with his coach's shoes on and the whistle in 1997 at the OTAs. Remember that, Fitzy?
Loosely. I'll be honest. I had a little bit of a disconnect. I was too sad that Parcells left and they gave up that long kickoff return touchdown to Desmond Howard.
The Bucky Jones, yeah. They have pictures of Kraft out there with his coach's shoes on and a whistle. Okay. Hires Pete Carroll, basically doesn't go anywhere. Then he brings in Belichick. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now Belichick, it doesn't start very well, obviously.
Nope.
And at September 23rd, 2021, the day everything changed, the Jets game. No one seems to remember the time where Belichick is talking to Herm Edwards, basically saying, I think I'm going to get canned from this team at the end of this year. Remember, he was worried about that? They started, so then they lose that game. Brady comes in. Everything is great after that. And to the point where, so basically, my summation is this, is that Kraft was a horrible owner up until that point. He got rid of a Hall of Fame coach and had a great team and then basically almost ran in the ground. Belichick was well on his way to being out the door being Steve Spagnuolo if he didn't make it through his second coaching job with the Patriots. And now they have 20 great years. Tom Brady comes. And lo and behold, when Brady leaves, everything goes to crap again. And now we're back where we started.
Mm-hmm.
My point is that Tom Brady, we can argue to the degrees, made these people what they are, and now they're bickering left with being exposed with their pants down, yelling at each other. It's sad to watch, but the cause and effect is so direct. It all was great when Tom came. It all went to crap when Tom left. It really is that simple. All right, have a good night, guys.
In a lot of ways, I feel like I just got a little class was taught to me. Like, we just went to a little Patriot symposium, courtesy of our friend Dan and Cranston right there. And, you know, while there may be some finer points some elements that we can finesse to his little TED talk, if you will. Jeez. It can't be that. Look, do you think it's really as simple as ownership issues, Sean?
No, it's not that simple. It is in large part. There is a large portion of this that blame should be falling on the craft. Absolutely. I don't disagree with that. I don't think it's entirely ownership related, though, right? Like, it's, I mean, you had 22 years of unprecedented success. And so eventually, Father Time comes a-calling, and mm-hmm. you're going to fall back to the wayside, and you're not going to be as good anymore. It just, it always happens. I mean, look at the 49ers, how great that dynasty was with Montana into Young. Like, they fell on hard times in the 2000s there. Like, that's just going to happen. It's kind of the cyclical nature of the sport. And so you can only kick the can so far down the road. And I think the Patriots are paying for that now. However, like, I think there's an avenue that they get out of it quickly. They just need to act properly on it, right? You found the quarterback. You got the guy. That's the hardest part. You did that. Now you need to bring in the complementary pieces around him. Probably a better coach. Definitely a better offensive coordinator. 100% a better offensive line and receiver talent. And a better defense, or at least guys that want to tackle and stop the run. And then you're cooking with gas. Like, it seems daunting, but you acquired the most difficult piece to get for a franchise. You have the quarterback. You step one, smashed it out of the park, in my opinion. Some people may still think there's a question, whatever. I believe you smashed it out of the park. Now it's time to start taking steps forward and stop going backwards. You have the guy. Let's build on that.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. Maybe it's recency bias, whatever it is that sort of like led to me forgetting that the San Francisco 49ers went 8 years without a winning record.
Yeah.
That's a 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. They went, geez, 7-9, 2-14, 4-12, 7-9, 5-11, 7-9, 8-8, 6-10. Not till 2011 when Jim Harbaugh entered the chat. They went 13-3 and they lost the conference finals to the New York Giants and Eli Manning, who went on to, son of a bitch, forget it. We don't need to go there. But yeah, you can suffer during that time. Not having the right coach. They went through Dennis Erickson, Mike Nolan, Mike Singletary, Jim Tom Sula. Holy smokes.
Yeah, it's just a revolving door of crap.
Yeah,
sometimes that's what happens now.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you are here. But again, the big difference between you and the 49ers is you've already hit on the quarterback. You already have a guy that's better than any guy they had coming into the building through those years. So it's like, all right, we found the right guy. Now let's not F it up. And I think that's where it really will fall on ownership, is that they need to make sure that they're putting the right people in the right position to succeed.
Yeah,
Whether that's Elliott Wolf and Jerod Mayo and Alex Van Pelt, I don't believe is the case, but it's yet to be seen, I guess, technically. We haven't been through a whole season yet. We don't exactly know. But I would say early indications would say probably not. And so you need to be prepared to move on from those guys and get good, experienced, strong-willed people in the building that are going to help Drake May and this football team going forward.
Yeah, since I always love to find some sort of metaphor that is apt or analogy that is apt for the situation, you know, I would have liked if the Patriots kind of worked their way through the foundation if they're going to go with this kind of gut reno on the team. But look at it this way. In landing Drake May, you pick the perfect town, great school district, and you got a nice plot of land. Now just go ahead and build. Now just get to work on the house. Make sure you dig a trench, good foundation, support the kid with everything he needs around him, and don't let the finesse get in the way of just like basic football economics at this point. They probably should have done a better job if they knew they wanted to take a quarterback number 3 overall. They didn't. They've also been snake bitten. You can't predict that you're going to lose your best D tackle, your best linebacker, and your best safety all within a couple of weeks of each other. But you know what? At the same time, NFL happens, Shime. Let's see. I got a couple of calls here. Real quick one. Before we go to the break, everyone else hang on. We'll get to you over the course of the hour. Doc is in Maine. Hi, Doc. How are you?
Hey, thanks for taking my phone call. I just want to say I'm a former coach, not football, but I think coaching is so much generic that over 50% of it just applies to any sport. But I'd love to be the receivers coach, because what I would have done about 2 weeks is I would have gone into the receiving meeting and said, not for nothing, you clowns, but it's going to take you some of you between 8 to 12 years to make what you're making this year. Why don't you keep your mouth shut? Thanks for the call.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Appreciate the call, Doc. It's Tyler Hughes, everybody. Tyler Hughes.
That's the receivers coach?
Yes, he is a new addition to the coaching staff, supplanting Troy Brown. Tyler Hughes came in this year. Let's see, Tyler Hughes. Where was Tyler Hughes previously? Let's go ahead and find that right there. All right. Hughes returned to New England after spending three seasons with the Patriots from 20 to 22 as an offensive assistant. Last year, he was at the University of Washington. Oh, wait a second. We got Tyler Hughes in the Steve Belichick trade? Weird. prior to New England, he spent two seasons as the head coach at Bountiful High School in Utah.
Neat.
Sounds like a real stud.
Bountiful High School. Sounds like a great place to be.
That's the tweet.
Neat. That's the tweet. What are we doing? Oh, God.
He spent 2 years. You're gonna command the wide receiver room with a new quarterback in the NFL in today's high-powered, trickeration-based, this-that, zing-zang formations. He may have the most beautiful football mind in the world. Are we sure this guy was ready to be the wide receivers coach?
I would say probably not. But you know what, Fitzy? Here we are.
Once again, everyone. Prior to joining New England in 2020, Hughes spent two seasons as the head coach at Bountiful High School in Utah. Oh, my God.
I bet that was a bountiful program.
Oh, my word. Where are we? Oh, this just feels like... Can I take the goggles off and get off the VR right now and just go back to reality, please?
We used to win Super Bowls, man.
I know, honestly.
This is where we are. Speaking of that, Fitzy, real quick, okay, before we get to the break, super positive take for you.
Here we go.
Okay. Fitzy, I believe you're definitely a fan. I don't know that Zach is familiar with this, but Fitzy, you're definitely a fan of the classic television sitcom Seinfeld, correct?
Of course.
Of course. So many, many moons ago on an episode of Seinfeld, there was a time where George felt that everything he did in his life was wrong. Every decision he had ever made was incorrect. So Jerry said to him, if every instinct you have is wrong, then the opposite would have to be right. We are at a point where no sign under any circumstance indicates that the New England Patriots should have any shot of winning any game at any point going the rest of the way. However, I feel like we've had other inclinations of this team that have led us to believe that they could, and then we've been wrong many, many times. Outside of Drake May, we've been wrong about, like, everything when it comes to this team. This is, like, the ultimate Costanza. This is the opportunity where the Patriots come in and, like, stick it to Aaron Rodgers, and you're going to be the only person that bets on them. You're going to be the only person in the world that bets on the New England Patriots because nobody can see this dysfunction and be like, yeah, I want to support that.
So wait a second. You're telling me that your presiding theory for the weekend is that the prevailing Scheim theory is that we have to call this the ultimate Costanza because the entire world should look at the Jets and say it opened at 3.5. It mushroomed up to 7. The Patriots are a disaster. Everyone has sworn them off, including myself, who last week on the Six Rings postgame show said, that's it. I'm never picking the Patriots again.
Yep.
So now I have to be the guy that walks out of the bar and says, that's it. I'm cleaning up my life tomorrow. The diet starts on Monday. And the first thing I do is help myself to a big slice of cheesecake and a beer.
Every indication is that the Patriots will lose and probably get embarrassed Sunday, which means I would pick the Patriots. The ultimate zag is to pick the Patriots.
All right, there it is, folks. You heard it first. Before we even get into his picks for Thursday Night Football, the rest of the weekend and beyond, Scheim with the ultimate Costanza. Why not pick the Patriots this weekend? Because everything in the world tells you otherwise. Desperation, thy name is Fitzy and Scheim, and we're coming right back at you in a couple minutes here on EEI. Don't go anywhere.
Prepare yourself, Pats fans. Drake Mayhem returns with Fitzy and Scheim on WEEI.
They should be pounding him.
Yeah.
If this was New York, it would be way worse.
Yeah.
But there's too many here that just want to be covering the Patriots and put that on their resume.
Well, that's true. But
put it on there. To your point, that's how they're getting clicks.
Yeah.
They're on Twitter telling everybody, I cover the Patriots. See my avatar?
Yeah.
With me talking to Tom Brady? That's the identity for half of these people.
Wow. Is that our old pal Paul Perillo taking a shot at his old pal from Patriots Unfiltered, Andy Jumbo Hart? I'm not sure if they hashed this out or if Hart was able to get to the bottom of that, but it's kind of funny that audio today from the Patriots Unfiltered radio program. Shime, we thought that would be the perfect rejoin coming off of your insanely Seinfeldian Costanza theory, Pat's positivity, to play that as well right there. Do you think in another market, like let's say Chicago or New York, the Patriots would be getting hammered harder by the media? And is our media in town, which so many fans have an issue with, why I don't know, and many refer to as the media cartel or the mediates of Boston, do you think our media is, as the team was accused of being, soft?
I don't think so. I mean, they had a guy in that building saying they were bordering on mutiny just a few weeks ago, which, by the way, everyone owes Evan Lazar an apology because I sense a mutiny afoot. Like, he was probably right. Like, I don't think we're soft at all. I think we rip this team more than anybody. I think we are currently in a state of depression that may make us seem soft because we are so depressed at what we're witnessing, but I mean, we rip this team left and right, don't we?
I think we're just honest about it. At this particular station, on many of our shows, and I'll just sort of say myself, I mean, for the love of God, I mean, I work for the team. I have a side gig with the team, but I'm not prohibited from speaking my mind or saying and making my peace about them as well. I feel like we're all pretty fair about this team. I don't think any of us just take these guys to the hill, or, you know, we don't put them in the Iron Maiden just because we need clicks or because we think negativity is going to sell. Like, seriously, like, I don't think that's the case at all. So I think if anything, you know, when you hear a lot of this, okay, so Ben Volen got caught, you know, kind of trusting somebody in his DMs once. We're all allowed a breakfast ball or a mulligan, and this is not the Ben Volen support hour here on WEEI. But, like, for the love of everything, people get so wrapped up. I think the media in this town is pretty harsh. It's pretty, you know what it is? It's much like the fan bases. It's passionate. It's committed. There's a lot of coverage. You should be so grateful that there's actually a lot of coverage, so you get everything from all sorts of angles, from all the great stuff that Mason and Mark Daniels and Karen Garigian do at Mass Live, our guy Callahan over at the Herald, Taylor Kyles does bang-up work at CLNS, and you've got so many different perspectives, too. Old school, you know, beat people. I don't say beat people. I mean beat reporters. You know what I mean, people. Yeah. You know, just getting a good old fist fight and then split a bottle of Cutty Sack afterwards.
Wreck 'em.
You know what I mean? And, like, next-gen analytics, new wave stuff. Like, get a little bit of everything. I think it's fair. I think that's... I don't know. I think maybe in a different town they'd be hammered a little further. Who knows? I don't know.
What do you mean? In this town, don't we always hear, like, it's so hard to play at Boston because all they do is rip you and ridicule you? Like, don't we hear that all the time? How now all of a sudden are we soft?
I don't. Honestly, I don't get it.
As Wiggy said this morning, that math don't math.
I mean, so is that almost in a way Perillo saying, like, boy, I wish I wasn't under, you know, and in the house media so I could step out and just absolutely just lay into the, I don't know. Maybe there's also a lot of pent up frustration with people just from what I have no idea, because the access we had for so long was so great and we've had such great content. Also, by the way, this is compelling content. I hate to say it, like, this is, you know, we don't love where everything is right now, but at least we have something to talk about. But that's again how passionate we are. By the way, the text line at 37937. Zach is putting together the best text of the evening, which we'll get to in the 7 o'clock hour. This one in from Jim, listening in Hopkinton tonight. Correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't Kraft fire 3 Hall of Fame coaches in Parcells, Carroll, and Bill Belichick? I don't think he fired. That would be amazing if that's fully true. He's parted ways with, but I don't believe he fired Parcells. Parcells walked away, correct?
Yes, Parcells left of his own accord. That was one of the big things. That's what my father was always, historically, my father was always infuriated. He hated Parcells because he felt that prior to that Super Bowl, Parcells knew he was leaving, and so he had zero desire to actually win the Super Bowl for the New England Patriots, and so he blames Parcells for not winning that Super Bowl in mid-90s.
Mother possible. That's still, I mean... I don't know where that one falls on under the frustrating calls of many years of Pats fandom, but that whole week of him making all those phone calls out to Hempstead while he was at the Super Bowl, not getting the team better prepared. Oh, there's a reason why he's not in the Patriots Hall of Fame. All right, last call of the hour. Go to an old favorite down there on the South Coast. Steve's in Fall River. Hello, Steve.
How are you?
How are you, Shime,
how old were you? How old was Shime in 2006?
In 2006, I was 14.
Good. So that I consider you sports aware from the age of 12. Let me step on Danny's thing and add to it. They had 20 years of, not 22 years. They had 01 to 18. 19 was an abject failure with Brady. You've got Belichick now, 1-1 in the playoffs, in two playoff appearances in 11 seasons without Tom Brady. I'm going to add in Drew Bledsoe into the Kraft's rap sheet. Without two top 10 quarterbacks, they've had one season, repeat, one season, and they were 0-1 with Mac Jones. They've been an abject failure since then. So, of course, it was all of Brady. It wasn't one needed the other. It wasn't a triumphant. They all had to have. No, it was all Brady. A sports writer said about Peyton Manning when he went to the Denver Broncos, he said one of the greatest quotes, and encapsulates what Dan said. He said when Peyton Manning walked into the offices of the Denver Broncos, the entire organization got better, even the reception. You can't get a better quote to encapsulate what a top five quarterback of a Hall of Fame or a great quarterback does for an NFL franchise. But Bill Belichick also won three Super Bowls with Tom Brady off of draft picks that Danny brought up, 93, 94, 95, 96. He neglected to say they signed an undrafted free agent. That was their free agent. Now think about that, Shine. Those guys were critical for the 01, 0, and 03 and 04 Super Bowls. Guys that were drafted in one, excuse me, in 92 to 96. That means right now, you run it up to now, 2024. Let's say the Patriots had a 21, 23, and 24 Super Bowl win. They were relying on players. They would be relying on players they drafted in 12 through 16.
Steve, I got to get to Steve. I have to get
the drafts were.
Yeah, I got to get to the top of the hour, Steve. So if you have a grander, greater point you want to get to, please let me know. Otherwise, I gotta make sure we pay the like.
I mean, get to the point.
I give Steve a chance. I appreciate the history lessons, but like I folks, you can't do a mini podcast in the middle of the radio show. Sorry.
And the tough part is like I largely agree with a lot of what he said. I do.
So do I. You just got to get to it.
The quarterback makes all the difference. I totally agree. But at the same time, I don't think if it was just Tom Brady in New England over those 20 whatever years, they would win seven Super Bowls. I think Bill Belichick was a large part of that. I think the perfect example for me is you look at the Rams, what the Rams did, right? Sean McVay gets to a Super Bowl and gets crushed because Jared Goff isn't good enough. What does he do? He goes and gets one of the best possible quarterbacks available, Matthew Stafford, who might be the most underrated quarterback of my generation, comes in and immediately wins the Super Bowl. And I think there's a reason for that. I think it's because he's right. Peyton Manning walks in the building and everyone is better for it. Matthew Stafford walks in the building and everyone is better for it. But Matthew Stafford sans Sean McVay wasn't a Super Bowl winner. He wasn't even getting close. And so I think there's a certain relationship there that matters because the coach, the game planning and stuff, that stuff matters. The quarterback is absolutely most important, but the coach and the game planning and building a system like that is largely important as well.
Couldn't agree with you more, my friend. Couldn't agree more. All right, 617-779-7937 is the number. If you're on hold for a moment, or if you'd like to make the call, please try not to podcast in the middle of our radio show or be like some of our other fine callers and get to the point before the show is actually over. When we come back, one more supersized break coming up. We'll pay a little love to the Celtics because the Patriots aren't the only act or blank show in town as well. Plus, we'll give you our best bets for Thursday night football. We've got an interesting update from the Rama Jamma side. I think this game just got way more interesting
Absolutely.
Than it was but an hour ago. We'll be with you till 7:30, and then we'll throw it to Westwood One's coverage of Thursday Night Football. It's Fitzy, it's Shime, it's young Zachary Coe, and it's you here on EEI.
From the WEEI studios, 93.7 WEEI-FM and HD1, Lawrence, Boston, and Odyssey Sports Station. Prepare yourself, Pats fans. Drake Mayhem returns with Fitzy and Shime on WEEI.
You was pretty good when you got your hands up. Just something I've been dreaming about for a very, very long time. A moment that I've looked forward to since I've gotten to the league, and a moment that I've been very, very close to winning a championship and falling short. So to finally get over that hump and finally be a part of opening night ring ceremony, something I've watched, you know, every year since I was a kid. It was just a wild moment. Like, this is, you know, I'm a part of it. I'm a part of history, and, you know, it was worth the wait.
That was a very excited Jason Tatum, who was so overjoyed he was speaking double time the other night.
Classic producer mistake, which I make all the time.
I didn't even notice that until you just said it.
Trust me, we live as a producer. I know we live in double time speed. I don't know if you listen to like podcasts or anything, Fitzy, in two time speed. I do it all the time because that's just how I live when editing audio.
Right.
And so every once in a while on the Greg Hill Show, I'll start a clip and be like, "Oh crap, I'm in two time speed," and I have to stop it, restart it. And
happens. We got the gist of everything, and then some.
I knew he swore at some point during it, so I gave it a quick listen before to make sure this wasn't one of the clips, and then just left it there.
Yeah, I was the one who played the swear the other morning, so good job by you.
Oh, you did?
Oh, yeah, I didn't realize that Tatum swore in his postgame because I went to bed at halftime because they absolutely blew doors on the Knicks. So I woke up the next morning, and the cut was just there, so I played it, and it had a nice big fat F-bomb in the middle of it. That was good.
Ah, there's nothing like a well-placed F-bomb right in the middle of a perfectly good cut. That happened to me a while ago, too. We were playing some tailgating audio from somebody who was spewing some truth about the future of the franchise. I think it was from, grab something from LFG Sports. Well, long story short, just like out of nowhere, I hadn't even heard it because I watched 80% of the clip, you know, at the 1 minute and 1 second mark, just a nice juicy F-bomb right there.
That's why we make the dump button, folks.
That's why we got it. A little behind the curtain, behind the scenes right there. Anyway, so your Boston Celtics, folks, that was quite the impressive debut the other night. Got to be honest.
What a game.
Given everything I'd heard about the Knickerbockers and their big trade for Cat, the fact that most people, including our own Justin Turpin, when we had a little roundtable last weekend, we all picked the Knicks as the biggest threat. And, of course, one game does not a season make. And they, you know, spirits, just like the banner, were flying high that night. A very emotional evening for everyone. You had the Big 3 2.0 coming back to the Garden as well. The vibes were immaculate, as the kids like to say, Shime. And there's every reason in the world why the Celtics should have won. I did not see them absolutely blitzkrieging the Knicks with the three-point reign of terror. I know the Knicks technically shot a little bit better, but those percentages matter not because the Celtics absolutely whooped up on them. And while, you know, okay, sure, Colin Cowherd, after the game you can tweet 82-0 is still on the table. Sure, my hopes for this team immediately went higher. And while I'm not going to say they're going to completely run it back, I feel like an Eastern Conference Finals bare minimum appearance is like the low bar for this team right now, who seems to have a little bit of everything. And oh, by the way, we get to trade for Porzingis in 2 months.
Yeah, Fitzy, I don't even think I think Eastern Conference Finals is undershooting them. They should be in the finals. I don't think there's particularly a question, right? Like, the Knicks are going to take some time to gel. It doesn't shock me that you blew doors on them on banner night where the emotions were running high. You were ready to go. They weren't. And it's kind of that simple. But you also point out that you get Porzingis halfway through the season. And so, like, to me, it is finals or bust with this team again. I think, honestly, you should win. I don't think there's another team outside of maybe... definitely not in the East, but maybe like the Thunder or the Nuggets that are really going to compete with you at all. Like, it's those are the two teams to me that kind of stand out. Everybody else, though, man, I think you should just walk right over everyone in the East. The Bucks are just not good. The whole Giannis Dame Lillard thing doesn't work.
Well, they won last night, but you know, that's because they were going up against a 76ers team. But they went up against a 76ers team last night with no Paul George and no Embiid.
Yeah, and again, Embiid doesn't play like half the games of the season. He's injured constantly, and I'm just never scared of the Sixers. It's kind of just, you're just their daddy. You kind of own them. It is what it is. So there's two teams out of the way. You're going to murder the Knicks. Like, they don't stand a chance against you. Jalen Brunson's a great player, but between Cat and Mikal Bridges, your next two, no thanks. And so, like, I look at it, and I'm like, okay, like, Cleveland might give you some issues just because they play a little more defensively, and it's more of a grindy game than anything else, but the Celtics should still walk all over them, and the same with Indiana if they find themselves in a situation like that again. I don't see a single team in the East that can stand toe-to-toe with the Celtics in a seven-game series. I just don't see it. And so to me, it is finals or bust for this team. They're that good.
Yeah, there are teams that are going to sneak one by them during the regular season.
Sure.
I think this Celtics team, it was too put on alert over the course of the summer. The worst thing that could have happened for the rest of the league is the best thing that could have happened to the Celtics. You can't have the complacency set in. You can't have a championship hangover. With Jaylen Brown, he was pissed because he got left off the Olympic roster. And then with Jaylen Brown, he gets left off the Olympic roster, and then Jason Tatum makes it, and then he's like a healthy scratch two times and doesn't get nearly the minutes. Yeah, from Steve Kerr, for what reason, Lord only knows. But now, both of them got a free 5-hour energy of motivation and anger. Their tires got lit during the offseason, just when you would think they'd be like, you know, that's cool, we finally got one, we'll see where this goes, and we got a lot of money. Nope. Instead, now they're in, you know what, full Kyle Van Noy, we're going to go on a revenge tour. I can't believe the Celtics finally got their banner, and they're going to go on a revenge tour. Side note to just everything on Banner Night, by the way, love seeing everyone there, dying to know where Paul Pierce was hanging out afterwards, because he looked like he was already, he probably couldn't feel his feet as he was sashaying in with the old trophy. Great to see the big three together. Great to see Ray Allen. It was a very emotional night. I thought Tatum's speech, you know, let's do it again. Loved every single thing. The rings are just straight fire. Unbelievable. One thing. Could we not have ironed the banner before we hung it?
Or could we have not cut away from it on TNT in the middle of hanging it? Is it that hard to ask?
It's a banner. They hung a wrinkled banner. How could you prevent not? How could somebody, like, there's got to be someone there like, Leonard, listen, your one job as PA, as floor PA, Leonard, is to make sure.
Leonard, I need you to come here. I need you to make sure you iron and steam the banner before we hang it.
Oh, sir, my Bluetooth steamer isn't working. Damn it, Leonard.
You had one job, Leonard.
You had one job, Leonard. Honest to God.
Oh,
Leonard's over at Halftime Pizza just crying into his buffalo chicken slice after the game, like, I just went one job. That's too bad. But yeah, man, I have extremely high hopes for this team. Here's a crazy thing for you, Shime. So I'm doing everything I can to get the 11-year-old, both of the boys, but most especially the 11-year-old, who's on the flag football team that I coach, who's now getting more involved in competitive sports in middle school because he loves being around his friends and loves, you know, just like every kid his age does. And he's way more interested in watching the Celtics than he is the Patriots.
I don't blame him.
I can't get him to watch the Pats. He's excited about Drake May. I bought him some Drake May rookie and Drake May UNC baseball cards.
Oh, nice.
So I could at least, like, kind of get him hopeful. And I went to the Northeast Card Expo and bought some stuff and just told him, like, hold on to these and just watch the Pats and root for this kid. So that hopefully he turns it around. He makes the Patriots a worthy endeavor. And then that way you'll be more excited and this will be worth a little something as well. But he's so much more into the Celtics because of how fun they are. Obviously, everyone likes a winner and the bandwagon takes on fans. The fan wagon gets weightier and weightier every year. I get it. And it's going to be hard to keep the whole thing together when they sell the team and they're paying umpteen bazillion in luxury tax and second and third apron or whatever the hell it is. That stuff gives me a popsicle headache. But I get it. The most expensive ticket in town, Celtics. Patriots, you know, I don't even know if the stadium's going to be full Sunday. And on the secondary market, they're going for, you know, 3/4 and 2/3 of face value, which is just obscene to me. It's such
it's
a
crazy,
strange paradigm
sense.
Shift, and it goes against everything that I thought I was going to believe for decades to come.
Yeah, you're right. It is a very awkward shift for us, but at the same time, it makes sense. Like, this Celtics team is an absolute wagon, and so it doesn't blame me. And they play such a fun version of the sport, too. It's not they play defensive. Like, they're good on defense, but they score a million points. They are, to me, like a better version of that Warriors team with KD, where they're equally as efficient from three, but they're also so much more dynamic in multiple other aspects of the game and better defensively. And it's just like, and like the guys doing it aren't like tiny Steph Curry. Instead, it's, you know, 6'10" Jason Tatum, no longer having a hitch, just being 8 of 10 from three. Like, it's just, it's so fun to watch. They're such a fun team. They have so much personality. They're constantly smiling and laughing and having a ball because they're kicking everybody's ass. So I don't blame kids for like gravitating towards a fun and exciting thing like that, right? And then you look at the Patriots and it's like, yay, Drake May threw a 30-yard pass. And it's like, oh, our defense just let up like back-to-back 50-yard runs. Oh, boy, here we go. And like, what do you, and you're 1-6. Like, what do you do?
Yeah, like the question of like, Dad, how'd the Patriots do? They got smoked. Cool. How'd Drake May do? He was good. Okay, cool. Like, that's he just wants to know how.
Did he throw any touchdowns? I'll go watch the highlight.
Yeah, he'll just go watch YouTube Shorts and Instagram. That's how he consumes the Patriots at this point.
Bingo.
And you want to try to tell them like, nope, sit down. You're gonna suffer. I want you to suffer the same way your dad did. But of course, I suffered back in the day when we had six channels. Seven.
Yeah, exactly.
2, 4, 5, 7, 38, 56, and 68. Those were the channels I grew up with before we ever got any other channels, like 25. And then, you know, prior to cable TV and my mom buying the illegal hot box and everything else that made our house the most fun house to hang out
in. Where your son can go watch literally any sporting event from anything. Any era at any time.
He can watch anything literally everywhere, anywhere, anytime from all over the world. Yep. Why in the world would he languish through, you know, watching Hunter Henry false start, or you know, watch the Patriots? This is where it is, and I want him to suffer just like his old man did. You know, I was having a conversation today, Shime, with a buddy about how great the comeback is. This 3-part Netflix documentary on the Red Sox, and I'm gonna wait to watch it with my son, who currently also wants to watch a bunch of horror movies.
Nice.
I should get a list from like you and from Rich Keefe on all the horror movies to like I can show like a 12-year-old without, you know, terrifying them and preventing them from coming to my bed every single night. But,
sure.
You know, I want to watch this with him because I want him to understand just how much this mattered.
Yeah.
Like I've seen even if it's going to like bring a nostalgic tear to my eye from 1986 all the way to 2004 and how much it mattered to reverse the curse. That's great and all. And I'm sure I'm going to love the pants off of it. And shout out to everyone involved, including our own Ken Laird, who provided hours of audio for them to use from the old radio calls with Troop and Castigs. But, you know, I want him to sort of like understand, no, well before it was all just about winning in Boston and the Patriots and Tom Brady and everything, this mattered so much, kid. I hope something matters to you in this lifetime of yours this much as the Red Sox overcoming the Yankees and winning a World Series mattered to your dad.
Yeah, it mattered so much. Like, you look back at the 01 Super Bowl and then the 03-04 run for the Sox. Like, it's just, that stuff was life and death. The Yankees-Red Sox, like, rivalry was a blood feud. It wasn't even just a rivalry. It was, like, blood feud. It was the Jets and the Sharks. Like, it was death if you
Pedro
saw the other one.
Pedro threw Zimmer to the ground.
Yes! Like, we were, like, our Jason Veritek got in a fight with Alex Rodriguez.
Oh,
it was
great.
One of the greatest times of my life, and sports just aren't like that anymore. It's just all about being exciting and fun, and that's fine. That's good.
Jersey swaps, Shime.
Yeah, there's no hatred in sports anymore. Not the way it used to be. And I think that's what gave sports its like own little zest. And it's different now. And, you know, that's just kind of the way the new generation rolls.
Well, we do have some sports on the television box tonight and tomorrow night. And then we get into college football. And then it's week 8 in the NFL. All right, Shime. Zach, fire up that music, baby. We've got some interesting news. It's kind of breaking news as far as Thursday Night Football goes. And the ratings, by the way, on Thursday Night Football have been excellent.
Yeah.
Amazon's like kind of pumping their own tires and taking a victory lap, showing how much people are watching Thursday Night Football, dominating all the other shows on the TV landscape. But get ready, everybody. DFS players, wagerers, and fantasy folk alike, Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp are both active and will return to the lineup tonight as the Rams host the Minnesota Vikings on Thursday Night Football. Shime, in addition to whatever sort of props you may offer us, I'm just freaking excited to watch maybe the best 1-2 receiver punch in the NFL back in action again tonight.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. I think I have to throw this out there. The Puka Nacua receiving lines right now are a mess. It looks like, I mean, his over-under is like 30 and change. I don't know if they expect him to only play limited minutes tonight, but like his catches number is only 2.5. His receiving yards number is 29.5. If you think Puka is actually going to play like full time tonight, I highly recommend going in and checking out a couple of his gambling lines, because these seem far, 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 far too low for a guy who's back and active and playing.
I wish I wasn't laughing, because on Twitter right now, there's a highlight of the Celtics game. A referee accidentally ran off the court up the sidelines into the front row and ran into a fan that was carrying a tray with 6 beers and knocked over all 6 beers. Oh, that's going to suck. I apologize. Anyway, they must. So there's got to be that classic sort of like Vegas must know something we don't know. So
maybe,
anyway.
Or it's just they like, or it's just bad lines. I mean, when you look at the Drake May lines the last couple weeks, like they still haven't caught on. His line this week is like 213. The kid hasn't thrown for less than 230 in his 2 starts.
Yeah, and by the way, the Jets secondary isn't what it used to be or as advertised. Neither is their defense in totality. All right, we're Costanzaing the Patriots on Sunday. We got a minute left before the show wrap, Shime. So give us what you like tonight. My favorite bet is Matthew Stafford, even with his guys back. He throws a pick every time he's on Thursday Night Football. I'll take the over prop on Matthew Stafford INTs tonight.
Yeah, my big one here. I'm going Rams money line straight up on you here.
Same.
Huge zag for you. Minnesota's coming off a super physical game with the Lions this past Sunday on short rest, having to travel to L.A. I like that spot for the Rams. Give me the Rams money line tonight.
And do we have a World Series pick, big guy?
I'll take the Yankees. Like I said, no more blood feud. Give me the Yankees.
I can't. I'm sorry. It's in my DNA forever until I am sent off on my Viking ship full of nachos and IPAs. I have to always zig when the rest of the world zags. I'll take Shohei and one of the most fun offenses I've seen in years. All right, that'll do it for the Fitzy and Shime program. Great job tonight, Zach Coe. Great job, Shime. He'll be back on the morning show tomorrow. I will talk to you guys Saturday from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. with Miss Megan Ottolini filling in for Ken and Curtis. Then, of course, on the Six Rings post-game show Sunday after Pats at Jets. Thanks for hanging with us, everybody. Watch your Celtics. Enjoy the documentary. Watch some Thursday Night Football. Enjoy the World Series. Enjoy it all. It's a great time to be alive and be a sports fan. Take care, everybody.
See ya.